Summer is nearly upon us in western Wisconsin, and there is plenty of news afoot in our outdoors. This hour, we bring on the outdoor guys and a panel of outdoor experts to talk all about it. This is the West Side Outside. And joining me are the usual suspects. We've got Joe Knight. He's the outdoor editor for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. Joe, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
Good to have you here. And Dave Carlson, he's the creator and host of the TV program Northland Adventures, also busy writing for publications like, what is it,
Wisconsin Outdoor News.
Yes, sure. Yes, like a Bible for outdoors men and women.
A lot of subscribers in the state.
Definitely. Well, thanks, Dave, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure. Also, we've got a list of special guests coming up this hour. First, we are joined right now by phone. Bill Hogseth is on the line. He's a wildlife biologist for the DNR based out of Eau Claire, out of the Eau Claire Regional Office. But where are you at today, Bill?
I'm calling from my home today.
Oh, well, nice and comfy. I'm glad to have you on the program. Thanks so much.
Yep, thanks for having me.
And then later on, we're going to hear from DNR fisheries biologist Scott Toshner, who's going to tell us about fish sticks in Wisconsin lakes. And then we'll be joined a little later in the hour by a volunteer angler education instructor, Dennis Vandenblumen. He's also involved with the Conservation Congress and I believe the County Deer Advisory Councils, just all-around outdoorsmen. So that's the program. Also, listeners, we want to hear from you. You can join in, ask a question. The number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again, 1-800-228-5615. Excuse me. Well, Bill, again, welcome to the program. And we're hearing about a collaboration between some folks at the DNR and Pheasants Forever, the Wisconsin chapter. Tell us a little bit about what's going on.
Yeah, what we've got going on here locally is we've acquired some funding through the Wisconsin State Pheasant Stamp Program to do grassland habitat restoration on private properties in southwest Eau Claire County. And the local chapter of Pheasants Forever, the Chippewa Valley chapter, has graciously stepped up, and they've matched the grant funds that we've received. So they've increased the amount of money that we have to spend. And what we're doing is we're looking for conservation-motivated landowners in the southwest portion of the county who have some property they want to do some habitat work on for grassland stuff. And we are here to help them and provide them funding to help them do what they want to do and get some good conservation work done.
Very cool.
Bill, can you describe what kind of terrain you're looking at? What kind of landowner might qualify?
Sure. Well, first of all, we're looking for landowners in that southwest portion of the county, and that really is the grassiest part of Eau Claire County. And that was one of the areas that was historically a pheasant release area. So from the 80s on, we've been releasing wild birds throughout Wisconsin, pheasants, wild pheasants, trying to establish breeding populations. And the reason that area was chosen was because it has really, really good habitat. So it's a good mix of wetlands, grasslands, brush, forest edge, and agriculture. There's a lot of pasture in that area, which is good pheasant habitat. And that's really the beginning of the driftless area. As you're moving south across the county, that's really where the coulees and the hills and valleys really start to begin. It's a really beautiful area, and it's great grassland habitat, and we're hoping to do some good work there.
What kind of practices are you talking about? Like food plots, or is that not on the table? And also, what kind of incentive is there for a landowner?
Sure. We're looking to do permanent grassland work, so prairie planting. So we're willing to help out with the cost of running a seed drill or buying seed. Prescribed burning. I know there's a lot of landowners out in that part of the county who have good habitat, good grassland habitat. They just don't have the resources to get it burned, which is a practice that's really good for maintaining prairie and grass. So we're willing to help out with that in terms of the funding that's necessary to take it over. Tree removal. Sometimes grassland restoration requires you remove a few trees, and that can be expensive. We're not looking at food plots, and the reason for that is, you know, that is an agricultural landscape, so there's a lot of crops already in that part of the world, and pheasants really have access to some of the waste grain that's on the ground after those crops are harvested, so we're not really looking to fund food plots.
Well, also, wouldn't the food plots maybe create some artificial behavior? Is that some of the idea, too, like as if, you know, when you feed deer?
Well, the idea for food plots with pheasant management is that it provides overwinter food in the form of grains.
Okay.
And that's a really good practice in areas where those where crops don't already exist. But in this part of Eau Claire County, it's already present because the landscape is an agricultural one.
Right.
So, Bill, are you pushing prairie grasses? If I just want to have a field full of switchgrass, is that okay with you too?
It would be okay. We encourage people to make, you know, to have diverse species plantings for prairies because it's just better habitat. The research has shown that diverse plantings produce more insects, and during the breeding season, that's what a lot of these grassland birds are eating and feeding to their young. So that's really, really good protein for breeding birds. So we'd like to see diverse mixes, but really any amount of permanent perennial grass on the landscape is excellent nesting and brooding habitat for these birds.
Bill, what's the financial incentive for a landowner, and what's the timetable on this?
We've got 2 years to spend this money, and we're looking to accept the first round of applications by October 1st. The financial incentive is that we will cost share with the landowners. We're expecting landowners to put up money of their own as well, but we will come to the table and we'll match what they're able to provide. And we're also looking to work with federal programs like the EQIP program that helps private landowners do conservation work. So we'll put landowners in touch not only with our money, but we'll help them apply for federal money as well. So hopefully this little pot of money that we've got can start gathering other funds from other sources and, you know, multiply the impacts on the landscape.
A reminder, we're talking with Bill Hogseth. He's a DNR wildlife biologist based in Eau Claire. Right now we're talking about a project between the DNR and Pheasants Forever to set up some habitat in the southwestern part of Eau Claire County for pheasants. If you have a question or a comment, and it doesn't have to be about pheasants, 800-228-5615 is the number to call. Also, a little bit later, we're going to hear from Scott Toschner, who is a DNR fisheries biologist, and Dennis Vandenblumen. 800-228-5615.
Bill, if I like bobolinks and meadowlarks, but I don't really care that much about pheasants, is this still a program I could take advantage of?
Yeah, great question, Joe. Restoring pheasant habitat pretty much provides equal benefits for all the other grassland birds out there, meadowlarks, bobolinks, lots of sparrows. And so doing work in the name of pheasants also carries with it lots of good stuff for declining grassland birds. And those birds are a huge conservation priority. Our breeding bird surveys show that they're the fastest declining group of birds in North America. So they're facing a lot of difficulties because of habitat loss. We've lost a lot of grass in the last 10 years. Eau Claire County alone has lost more than 7,000 acres of CRP since 2007. So whether you're a pheasant or if you're a meadowlark or a bobolink, it's equally as difficult to find a good habitat as it was 10 years ago. So if you're just like if you're a birder or whatever, and you just want to help the meadowlarks, I encourage you to give us a call because this program will help them as well as will help pheasants.
What do you think it'll do for public access, whether you want to go out and watch birds or hunt pheasants? Because there's a lack of public ground in that part of the county, other than maybe a little bit along Lowe's Creek and maybe whatever managed forest lands are out that way.
Yeah, good question. The landowners who are participating in this program don't necessarily need to make their land open to public access. But I agree with you that there is a lack of public land in that part of the county. Our feeling was that it would potentially make it difficult for some landowners who were interested in the habitat work but who were not interested in the public access side of things. It could be a deal breaker for them. What our hope is, though, is that maybe there is a few landowners out there who do sign up with this program, and we develop a relationship with them over the years, and maybe it leads to something where they would want to donate their land to Pheasants Forever in their will, or sell it to Pheasants Forever, or the DNR, or whatever entity would be willing to take the land. This program might be the beginning of that relationship that could lead in the future, who knows, to a block of public land down in that part of the county where it really doesn't exist yet.
So how does, if a person isn't able to go and hunt on this land directly, how does the general public benefit yet from this program?
Well, it keeps breeding pheasants in this part of the Wisconsin, and 96% of grassland bird habitat in Wisconsin is on private land. So we really can't expect to slow the declines that these birds are experiencing, pheasants and meadowlarks and bobolinks, without working with private landowners. And, the goal of the Pheasant Stamp Program really is to promote breeding birds. And in our county, Eau Claire County, where most of that habitat is on private land, we've really got to work with private landowners to slow those declines.
Paraphrasing conservation, a definition of it by Leopold, it's conservation makes sense to the landowner when there is a financial incentive involved. And this is another example of that, putting that to work. And the money that is raised by Pheasants Forever also is critical. That's part of their motive, their mission, and is it is to put conservation, put those dollars into the ground.
Yeah.
And this is, that's supported not by a few, but hundreds of people in Eau Claire County who are members of that organization, along with Chippewa County and, of course, thousands nationwide and other conservation groups as well. Conservationists from the Eau Claire Rod and Gun Club, for example, and other rod and gun clubs who are involved in pheasant management over the years through put-and-take pheasant hunting, but they've kept that spark of interest alive with those programs.
I did a little bit of research in that area back when there used to be more wild pheasants and knocked on doors out there. And some people will let you hunt, especially if they aren't a pheasant hunter themselves or if they don't have friends who they've already have an agreement that they're going to come out and pheasant hunt. So just because it is private land doesn't mean that no one can hunt there other than the landowners.
And certainly the birds don't know those boundaries.
Yeah, they don't care.
They move around and eventually are going to have an impact.
I'll tell you, the first time I'd ever seen a pheasant, I don't know if it was wild or not, if it had been a put bird, but was in Eau Claire. And it was in the intersection of Hamilton and Stein, which is just in the middle of the city. Doesn't make any sense. But I'm from northern Wisconsin, Superior, Wisconsin. They used to be in the grain elevator yards, but not anymore up there. So it's just neat to see them, I think, for someone who hasn't seen them.
Bill, do we have any pheasants left in Eau Claire County now that we've lost all this 7,000 acres of CRP or permanent grass?
Yeah, Joe, we do. I and my staff out of Eau Claire, we do annual surveys in the spring, and we drive two different routes, and there's 15 points each route, and we stop on the roadside, and we listen for 6 minutes, and we count the number of pheasant roosters that we hear crowing. And last year was a tough year for those birds after that horrendous winter, mm-hmm. And there was even one route near the Cleghorn area that I ran, and I didn't get a single crowing rooster on 15 stops. This year, that same route produced almost 17 roosters. So they're out there. They took a hit when we had a very harsh winter. But we do know that from that survey data, that they've been declining steadily for over a decade.
June is a tough month for the young ones, too, with rains. Repeated rains can can really cut into production, can it not?
Yeah, yeah.
So this program is there a time frame? I mean, you probably already mentioned that. And I apologize if you did, but how many years down the road are you hoping to continue this?
Well, this little pot of money we have is we have 2 years to spend it.
Sure.
But my hope is that what we find out from this 2 year program is that there's demand out there, and that there's conservation motivated landowners who want to work with us,
mm-hmm.
And that will give us the impetus to continue the program in the future years.
And does working with a private, you know, a conservation group like Pheasants Forever, does it help insulate a program like this from, you know, possible cuts at the state level, you know, when the next budget comes up?
Well, the Pheasant Stamp money is money that's made available to us because of hunters.
Sure.
And so when somebody wants to hunt a pheasant, they need a small game license, and they need to buy the pheasant stamp. And that pheasant stamp is supposed to go to habitat work. So hunters know that when they're buying that, they're funding habitat work across the state of Wisconsin. So it's not really necessarily applied to it doesn't come from the general revenue of taxpayer type of budget.
Okay.
Bill, is there any requirement that the land stay in grass or prairie, whatever it's planted to? Because I know we saw, as you mentioned, when the corn prices went up about 8 or 10 years ago, a lot of land that had been in grassland was plowed under and put back in production.
We've got a simple landowner agreement that folks are going to sign when they decide to do a project through this program. We're just asking folks to sign an agreement that says they'll agree to a 10-year time frame at a minimum. We're hoping, you know, that they want to do longer, but all we're asking is for 10 years. And if they want to do longer, that would be voluntary.
All right. Good. Thanks, Bill.
Well, yeah. Thank you so much, Bill. Bill Hogseth is a wildlife biologist for the Department of Natural Resources based in Eau Claire County. Joins us from his home by phone today. Thanks so much, Bill.
Hey, thanks, guys. Have a great day.
You too. Up next, we're going to hear from Scott Toschner. He's a DNR fisheries biologist based up in Brule. This is the West Side Outside. I'm joined by co-hosts Joe Knight. He's the outdoor editor for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. And Dave Carlson, he is outdoor writer extraordinaire and creator of the TV program Northland Adventures. If you'd like to join in the conversation, please do. The number is 1-800-228-5615 to call in. And you can also post a comment or question on the West Side Facebook page. We'll do our best to get it on the air. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll be back with more West Side after this.
Support for WPR comes from the University of Wisconsin Carbone Cancer Center and its affiliate partners across the state and in Northern Illinois. On the web at uwhealth.org/cancer. Support also comes from Mayo Clinic Health System. Patient online services offer secure 24/7 access to health records to view lab results, clinical notes, and medications. MayoClinicHealthSystem.org/online services.
I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side Outside on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. We just got done talking about a pheasant habitat restoration effort in southwestern Eau Claire County with Bill Hogseth of the DNR. That's a collaboration between the DNR and Pheasants Forever, the Wisconsin chapter. Now we're going to talk about fish sticks, of all things, and to help us explain what that means, we've got Scott Toschner on the line. Scott is a DNR fisheries biologist based in Brule. Scott, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Rich.
Good to have you on. Also joining me, of course, Scott, is Joe Knight and Dave Carlson, whom I'm sure you are well aware, familiar with.
Sure. Hi, Dave.
Hi,
Joe.
How you doing, Scott? It's good to hear you again.
So, and also, listeners, please call in. The number is 800-228-5615. This fish sticks thing is a really cool part of what's called the Wisconsin Healthy Lakes Initiative, which Scott is going to help us understand a little bit better this next 15, 20 minutes or so. So fish sticks, what the heck are you talking about? That sounds like a tongue-in-cheek kind of a funny way to describe something that's a very serious conservation effort.
Well, actually the term fish sticks came from Dave Carlson's cameraman, when he did a story on this several years ago for his TV show. I had been calling it Coarse Woody Habitat, and Dave thought that wasn't too user-friendly. So
yeah, it doesn't have the...
He suggested the name fish sticks, and really what fish sticks are restoring trees that drop naturally into Wisconsin lakes, and those trees have been dropping into the lake since the glaciers receded. They've been removed over time through logging practices in the turn of the century and then through cabin development. And these fallen trees provide shelter and feeding areas for a diversity of fish species, and also nesting habitat for birds and sunning areas for turtles, that sort of thing.
What kind of trees are you looking at, and where do you get them, and how do you place them?
The trees that we use are anything that's live, basically. We like a mix of species because they do break down at different rates. We get them from further than 75 feet away from the lakeshore, and that's the main difference between tree drops and fish sticks. Tree drops utilize trees that are standing along the shore that are then cut down into the water, whereas fish sticks utilize trees that come from upland areas. So we don't rob from the bank, so to speak, from trees that would naturally fall in. And it speeds up the clock a little bit on the restoration efforts. We place them in complexes we call complexes, which is basically just, you know, 3 to 5 trees that are anchored from their bases to the shoreline with cables, and then small cables put around their connection point. It kind of looks like a turkey footprint if you look at how they're laid out. Mm-hmm. Gives the structure some stability, and also helps hold the trees off the bottom just a tiny bit because they stack on top of each other.
Scott, how do you determine where you're going to place them, and how many do you put in?
Basically, it's a coalition of the willing. When lake associations or lake groups or even individual property owners are interested in participating, we look at their shoreline, we go out and do a site visit. There is some consideration of ice heaves, the effect that ice has when it goes out and blows into a shoreline. We have a different technique that we use for those high energy areas, but in general, most of the areas we do are low energy areas that we can place the trees right at the water's edge, the butt ends of the trees right at the water's edge so they extend out of the water.
I've got a couple dumb questions coming from the complete layman. I'm not an outdoor expert like these guys, but why does it have to be a live tree? Why can't you just find some old, you know, thing and toss it in?
The main reason for that is that the trees that are dead are pretty buoyant.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, so that the trees that are alive tend to have quite a bit more water in them, and they sink a lot faster. A dead tree, we have tried to use a couple of those, and they just don't sink very fast.
All right.
And Scott, for private lands, have you had good luck having landowners say, sure, I'd like to have a tree drop and or these fish sticks on my property? Usually, we seem just the opposite. A landowner goes in and they want to kind of clean up the area in front of their cottage and in the process removing what fish habitat was there.
Yeah, we have seen a lot of participation from private landowners, and I think the reason for that is that we're able to put these structures in the area of their shoreline that they're not using. So, you know, away from their dock, away from their swimming area, on that piece of their frontage that they generally just don't use for anything. And so we've seen a lot of participation up here in Bayfield and Douglas County. Over the last 5 or 6 years, we've placed over 2,700 trees in 15 different lakes. And generally, the biggest bang for our buck occurs when a lake association gets involved and actively recruits landowners to participate, and that way we get quite a bit of participation from private landowners.
A lot of work in the past has focused on fish cribs. Volunteer conservation groups have taken quite been very proud of the work that they've done. Can you compare the benefit of cribs and fish sticks and the costs related to each?
Sure. Fish cribs are a habitat device that has been used for years and years, like you say. And there's definitely a place for that in some areas, especially on lake shorelines that have a lot of very small lots, you know, maybe 100 feet for the length of the lot along the water's edge. It's harder to find places to put these. And in that case, fish cribs might be a better alternative. But where there's more room, fish sticks definitely have a utility. The main difference from a habitat standpoint and a cost standpoint, first of all, a fish crib costs approximately about $500 to install one crib. And for fish sticks, we're looking at about $25 per tree. So it's a little bit of a cost difference. And as far as habitat quality goes, I like to think of fish sticks as kind of bridging the gap between that real shallow habitat a lot of juvenile fish use and then the deeper water littoral habitat or the edge of the deeper water habitat, so that it basically provides an area for forage for the bigger fish. It provides a refuge for and kind of a nursery for smaller fish, whereas fish cribs are more of a deep water device. And they do attract fish, and anglers can catch fish around fish cribs, but they don't provide that link between the types of shoreline habitat that we see.
What kind of money is available for this, and where does it come from? And how, I guess, most importantly, how does Healthy Lakes Initiative factor into this?
Yeah, the Healthy Lakes Initiative was something that actually my wife was part of the working group that developed it this past year, and its first application period this past winter. And it's a source of money from the Lakes Grant Program that provides funding for, cost-share funding for six different types of practices. One of those is fish sticks. The other things include things like native plantings for the buffer, rain gardens, diversion practices, rock infiltration for any runoff that might be occurring on the site. And there's basically, it's a simple and inexpensive way for lakefront property owners to provide more habitat for the lake along their shoreline.
The number to call in is 800-228. We're talking about, fish habitat restoration in Wisconsin lakes, western Wisconsin lakes. We're joined by DNR Fisheries biologist Scott Toschner. He's joining us by phone. The number to call in is 800-228-5615. I also have the outdoor guys in studio with me. So is this a new thing? This, you said over the past few years. I mean, it seems like nature's been doing this forever. How long has the DNR been actively trying to work on these fish sticks?
Well, it's funny because this same idea came up in the 1940s and early 1950s. There's some really old pictures of Studebaggers on the ice, placing some of these structures, a couple lakes in northeast part of the state. And so it was an idea that people have been thinking about for quite a while. This program really started in Bayfield County on Boney Lake, a whole lake restoration project that was grant-funded through the state. And it was our initial try at doing these, once again, I guess, reviving an old idea. And so we've been doing it since about 2008 in Bayfield and Douglas County. And since then, there's been participation all around the state with different lakes getting involved. Basically, wherever there's a lake in the state, there's been some participation in this program. Hmm.
I think even on Half Moon Lake, we've had some, I guess you'd call those tree drops. I think there were trees near the shoreline. There were some by Mayo there that mostly done in the winter, I think, is when people like to go out and drop the trees.
Scott, say you're a landowner and a windstorm passes through or trees are struck by lightning or a beaver's real active and drops on. What should a landowner do, consider, before removing that? Or should they just... Well, there may not be any laws saying that, and just leave them alone?
Yeah, I live on a river that has access to a lake, and I have an appreciation for being able to moor my boat and have a swimming area. Mm. We have had trees falling along our shoreline, and when they don't bother our active use area, which is really pretty small, maybe 30 feet width, we just leave them in. And the best thing you can do is do that, leave them in. Wherever possible, because they do provide a really important habitat piece.
Well, and if a person wants to, take it upon themselves to just go upland and get a few trees and try to do this themselves, can they, or do they need some kind of a permit? Because you're altering the shoreline, I would think.
Yeah, it's a place within the water. You do need a permit. I would recommend that people go to the Wisconsin DNR website, dnr.wi.gov. and simply type in fish sticks in the search box. It'll take you to a page that has the best management practices for fish sticks projects, as well as a link to the general permitting website that would walk you through how to obtain a permit. One nice thing about these permits, and I forgot to mention this to Dave when I talked to him last week, is that the cost of the permit is initially $303. But if one person on a lake checks a box when they do the initial permit that allows other permits to basically tag on to their permit, they do not have to pay a fee. So once that first fish sticks general permit is taken on a lake, and that initial permittee checks that they're willing to have other people tag along on their permit, every other permit after that is free.
Which makes it sound like that would be well-tailored for lakes associations.
Yes, yes.
Cool.
Yeah. In our conversation, you said something which I really stuck with me. Fish need wood.
Yes, there's definitely a correlation between fish populations and the abundance of wood in water. Mm. Basically, every fish in a lake at some point in their life stage uses wood. Either it's for feeding, spawning, predation, macroinvertebrate production. Yeah, there's wood is a very important link, and we've had several studies that show that when you remove wood from a lake, it dramatically affects the fish population.
It's so strange to me. I mean, it makes perfect sense, I guess, but it still seems strange that the thing that we want is like what's probably worse for the actual animals that live in the, you know, the fish and the invertebrates and whatnot.
Nature isn't wrong very often.
Right, right. That's a good point.
Haven't they done studies in northern Wisconsin where your wild natural muskie populations, they drop off once you have a certain amount of shoreline development?
Yeah, and that's not just for muskies, but it's basically for a suite of species that once you get past a certain point with shoreline development and reduction in habitat that comes along with that, you definitely have declines in those species.
So we're going to turn the clock back now with the fish sticks?
Oh, we hope to. Or speed the clock back up. There's been some studies that show that to replenish the wood on its own, nature just taking its course through wind or beavers or ice action, it would take about 200 years for that naturally to happen on its own. And so, yeah, we're basically trying to speed the clock up and restoring that wood.
All right. Say, Scott, we've got our first caller of the morning, and we're going to go to that person right now, if I can. We've got Willem on the phone right now. Willem, you're live on the air. I just took you a little early. I know you were just talking with the screener, but what's on your mind?
Well, you know, I live in Dunn County, just over the Chippewa County line, and close to what's this proposed 1,300-acre Albertville Valley mine and other frac sand mines in the area. And I noticed that a lot of them have, like last August, there was a discharge into a trout stream, 18-mile creek, and a running valley creek, and some residual colloidal clay has been discharged into that creek, and other parts of the states have had, you know, I mean, Wisconsin have had similar problems with, you know, storm water, retention ponds not being adequate. Like last year we had this 5-inch rainfall, and there, in other states, I think in Texas they had 11 inches of rain. In Florida there was an 8-inch rain, and these are becoming more common, these large rain events. And I guess I'm concerned, I was just wondering what their thoughts were on the threats to our streams and wetlands and wildlife habitat by this, you know, 1,300 acres is a pretty big chunk of land. And
sure.
And, you know, how, well, I was just wondering what their opinion was on that.
All right. Hey, Willem, thanks so much. The number to call in, 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615. So, Scott Toschner, up in Brule, I imagine there's not a lot of sand mines up there, but is this something on the radar for DNR fisheries biologists, this superfine sediment that can leach out of industrial sand mines?
Yeah, like you say, I'm up in a part of the state where we don't have mining activity for sand, and I don't know a whole lot about it. I do imagine that the biologists who work in those areas are trying to work through the system to identify impacts and prevent those as much as possible.
Yeah. Actually, from speaking with some folks at the DNR, I think the DNR is looking at creating a actual stormwater permit specific to industrial sand mining. It's still in the works as far as I know. But anyway, thanks to Willem for the call. And any final questions from the outdoor guys for Scott?
Well, that's kind of a tie-in with the first part of our program. We're talking about grasslands, and that's one thing we've been seeing, not necessarily from the sand mines, but we've been seeing more runoff in the last 10 years as more land has gone into production and marginal land in many cases.
Right.
And I just wrote a story. It was that same creek, 18-mile creek, and there was a runoff, bad runoff about 2 weeks ago, and I was getting calls saying, hey, the sand mine is at it again. Well, it wasn't the sand mine. In fact, they're in this case, they're being a good corporate citizen. They're actually expanding the land area they're devoting to settling basins, but it was just your garden variety farm fields that were plowing at the wrong time. And
it made it look like coffee creamer again.
And I think that that farm runoff is actually worse because you're getting a big load of phosphorus and nitrogen that's going into Taner Lake and Lake Menomon, and those that's playing itself out all over the farm area of the state.
So. The scope of the problem is much greater too when you look at the entire watershed.
Yeah, definitely. Also, Texas getting just nailed right now with rain, and the rain events do seem to be getting more intense, but. Anyway, Scott Toschner is a DNR fisheries biologist based in Brule. Thank you so much for joining us, Scott.
Well, I really appreciate you having me. Have a great day.
You do the same. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Scott.
We're going to take our final break here on the west side, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Dennis Vandenbloemen. He is a volunteer angler education instructor. He's going to help us talk a little bit about the free fishing weekend coming up Saturday and Sunday, June 6th and 7th. Number to call in, 800-228-5615. This is the West Side. We'll be right back.
It's easy to connect with WPR through our website, WPR.org. Click on About WPR to give us your feedback, send in news tips, or contact our staff. Join one of our online communities through Facebook or Twitter, or subscribe to a program podcast. WPR.org. We're not just on your radio.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Dells, featuring more than 200 water slides, 80 restaurants, and championship golf. More information at wisdells.com. Wisconsin Dells, the water park capital of the world.
The L.A. Phillips Memorial Public Library in Eau Claire hosts a summer library program kickoff event for preschoolers Friday, June 5th, 10 a.m. in the Eau Claire Room. Information at the library by phone and online at ecpubliclibrary.info.
I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side Outside on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking about all things outdoors. Now we're going to kind of segue into the free fishing weekend that's coming up. It's Saturday and Sunday, June 6th and 7th. We're joined by Dennis Vandenbloemen. He is a consummate outdoors guy. Actually, that's a trademark thing. That's Joe and Dave, but we're going to lump him in there right now. Dennis Vandenbloemen, he is a volunteer angler and education instructor. He also is a Conservation Congress delegate member. He's also with the County Deer Advisory Council. You name it, he's there. Dennis Vandenbloemen, thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Also, we're joined by the outdoor guys. If you have a question or a comment for any of these gentlemen, give us a call, 800-228-5615. We're talking about the free fishing weekend, but I think we could also maybe squeeze in some SeaDeck conversation or whatever. But anyway, so here we are. Tell us about the free fishing weekend.
Well, they have two weekends in the year, one in June and one in January, where people can free fish. Means you don't have to have a fishing license. All the bag limits and rules apply to the fishing event. But what we try to do is bring some equipment down. There's loaner sites and sort of give people an introduction to fishing without having to spend a lot of money, first of all, for the equipment, and second, for the fishing license. So if I've had grandkids show up, and the grandparents from Minnesota showed up, and they got to take the grandkids fishing, and they didn't have to buy the out-of-state resident or non-resident license for a couple of days. So there's various events around the state. Some are registered, and some are just traditionally people do the free fishing weekend thing, and they don't even show up on our radar.
Say I've got a couple printed off, and I'm sure you're involved with something here closer to Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley area, but Dunn County location, Knapp, Wisconsin, the event, Learn to Fish with Certified Instructors, 9 to noon, and that is at Pond in Village of Knapp. That's 10 miles west of Menominee. Polk County, Osceola Fish Hatchery, Osceola's Rhubarb Festival and DNR's Free Fishing Weekend. That's Saturday the 6th, 8 to 9 a.m., stocking fish at 8 to 9 a.m., fishing from 9 a.m., so I don't know if they fish after what they just stocked or not. But
better to fish after you stock them before.
Yeah, I guess it is. Douglas County and Brule Family Fun Day, Saturday, June 6th, 10 to 3 p.m. at the Hatchery. So more locally, what's happening?
Well, the one in Knapp is the one that I'm going to do this first time in a long time that we're doing something outside the city of Eau Claire for free fishing. Generally, the Lake Halley group there has something. Chippewa County has one. And I checked on the website, and those aren't registered, but you could check with the local. In Chippewa County, it's usually the YMCA in Chippewa Falls.
Yeah, the YMCA is at 1 o'clock. They say they're going to have one.
I'm not sure because I checked, and some of the equipment will be used for them. I use my own.
Yeah. When you say equipment, what do the people have an opportunity to use?
Well, at the Knapp one, and the ones that we do, is we'll have basic Zebco 33s, and we teach people how to cast and just do a little bit with those, set them up. The simpler, the better. Mm-hmm. Really, you catch more fish that way.
Tie knots.
Tie knot.
Yeah, that's a biggie.
Clinch knot.
I'm still working
card
on that.
And I teach them how to do that. Kids under about 9 or 10 don't do knots very well. Mm-hmm. So you tie them on once, and then when it's gone, you know, it's gone. You got to cut the line. But teach the parents there because we want them to be accompanied by adults. We also have Trout Unlimited guys will be there, and we'll have the basic fly fishing equipment so people can catch. In that pond, they plant trout, but there are a lot of bluegills also. And I've taken two groups up there so far this year, and it's just phenomenal just to have a chance to catch fish on a fly rod. And then, okay, then it's a little more difficult when you go on a stream. But, yeah, the equipment is there.
Dennis also teaches a fishing class at UW-Stout.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my most popular class.
That's a class I missed. That wasn't offered. I would have been there right away.
College credit.
So we've got international business and then fishing. That's quite a...
My most popular class is fly fishing. And people, if they miss it, they really call and give me some tremendous excuses. But we do it in mid-March, and we almost always have a snow or wind event that cancels a Tuesday night fishing thing.
I believe Dennis is one of about 700 instructors, angling educated certified instructors in the state. That program since 1986 when it started, they have passed more than 105,000 people, worked with them, K through 12, novices.
Great.
And I think at one time I read there were 3,500 angler education certified people, only 700 of them being active now. So congratulations on that.
That's great. Yeah,
well, they put in 50 to 200 hours a year, I've been
told. Oh, yeah. I have trouble counting the amount of hours that we spend doing it because they say, oh, keep a log. And it's kind of hard to do that.
Mm-hmm. Is your program in jeopardy, though?
I have to check to see what actually got voted on in the obscure recesses of the state budget on
Friday. The Joint Finance Committee meeting on Friday.
Yeah, I don't know. I know some of the education positions were cut. I don't know which ones. But there is only one angler education position, just one, and it's funded by sport fishing restoration money. When we buy stuff, there's a federal excise tax that goes back. Well, that funds that position, so
it's not state tax dollars.
Nope. There might be a little portion of it because state tax dollars can't pay for some of the fringe benefits for that position. But that little bit, it's pretty cheap.
So does that person then coordinate with all the volunteers around the state?
They trained the people to be instructors, in my case, to eventually train me to be a trainer.
Mm-hmm.
So I now can go out and certify people as instructors. And so Teresa, the lady in Madison, doesn't have to come up here. I can just do it locally.
Gotcha.
And it's a lot easier, saves a lot of wear and tear on travel. And so I'll do that a couple times a year. So
fishing is very important to the state's economy. It seems really understaffed when one person has to help coordinate the education, which continues to funnel people into this very, very important part of our economy.
Well, yeah, you want to appreciate the thing. And people say, well, who's going to buy the next fishing license or hunting license? Well, it's people that participate in the outdoor stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing it. So.
Is it harder to get kids into fishing these days, you know, with the multitude of instant gratification things like video games and whatnot?
there's just a lot of things that kids have an option to do otherwise.
Yeah.
And it still have all the sports things in the summer to do as opposed to fishing. But it's pretty simple. Kid can pick up a fishing rod, and you don't have to buy worms. You can dig them in the backyard and go down to a river. And I see kids doing that all the time. And, you know, with minimal supervision, hopefully we give them a little bit of training.
Yeah.
And so they can be a little safe and it can do that. But there's a lot of different things. And then plus you've got a more it's a little further. We tend to think that, well, we're kind of urban here, but Eau Claire is not that urban. We got a lake right in the middle of the town, a couple of rivers that go through that are great for fishing. So a lot of shore fishing and a lot of opportunities. When people look for them, there's lots of shore opportunities. I've only bought a boat about a year ago. I've had a canoe for years, but finally got a pontoon boat. I take my daughter in a wheelchair out, and we fish. We were out this weekend, got dumped on with rain, made it an adventure.
It's part of the experience.
Yeah, it's all just part of the wonderful experience. And I got a couple of grandkids coming up this weekend. They stay with their dad in Minnesota during the summer, so I get them a bunch of weekends up in the Chautauqua area. And we'll be fishing this weekend, just having a great time.
Now, for this free fishing weekend, part of the idea is that adults can help, or is it more important to train the moms and dads, or more important to train the kids and get them in the habit of going?
Give the kids an introduction, but then the parents go, okay, we've got an introduction. We showed you that. It's just pretty simple. You don't need a whole lot of equipment, but here's the kind of stuff that you buy.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully they'll go off and buy a fishing license and then do it. A family license, a husband, wife, spouse license thing is $30. It's $20 for an individual, but $30 if they make it cheap to add that spouse to the thing. They both don't have to be there when you get the get the license. And then kids under 16 don't need a license, and then it's only about if it was $10 or $7, I forgot.
And how strict are the wardens? If I take a kid out and I don't have a license, but I'm casting out for him and I'm taking the fish off the hook for him, am I fishing?
That's fishing.
So yep. I'd get pinched for that.
You
if
can
a
get pinched for that, yeah, for $20, which is, you know, that isn't much money. It's a couple of movies for $20 and you get to go the whole year. And it includes, I mentioned the free fishing weekend. There's the one in January where people can go ice fishing. I don't do that because of the word ice. not interested in that. But they have a chance to do that.
This is the West Side Outside. I'm joined by outdoor guys Joe Knight and Dave Carlson. Also joining us right now is consummate outdoorsman Dennis Vandenblumen. He's a volunteer angler education instructor with the DNR and also is involved with Conservation Congress and County Deer Advisory Councils. If you've got a question or a comment, now's your chance to get the last one in the hour. We had one call. We can take another. 800-228-5615. Or else, if you're bashful, post on Facebook and we'll get around to it.
Let me mention a couple other events that we got coming up. Lakeshore Elementary School, for longer than I've been doing it, is going to take all their kids fishing in 2 days on Thursday and Friday. You're invited to come tie knots. I'll tie 130 knots in 2 days.
And where do they go?
They go right on Lakeshore. They walk over the causeway from where the Lakeshore Elementary is, right in Half Moon. There's about one adult and teacher per four kids and volunteers. And I'll just sit in the pavilion there with some coffee and maybe some bad donuts. And I'll just tie hooks back on.
Wow.
And I'll tie 130 in 2 days. And I'm not the only one
tying.
You get
some cramped fingers.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I got another 35 or 40 I have to tie on yet today for other programs.
You have a good supply of bobbers for the ones that end
up
in the tree?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Lots of bobbers.
Who cleans all the fish?
We don't. We catch and release. We throw everything back. We don't want a kid to discover 3 days later they got a fish in the backpack. So we don't have anything like that. And Dunn County, they're having a Conservation Alliance group there. It's a fishing event for disabled adults. So I'm double booked on Friday. I'll be there Friday instead of Lakeshore.
Where's that?
That's at on Lake Manoamin and out of
what kind of
park? Trying to think. That's about 9 to noon for people. I think it's pretty booked. Okay. But our friend Dan Pesterbach from the Pheasants Forever runs that program and has a whole bunch of volunteers, and they've been doing that since Gretchen and I started fishing in the late 90s, and it was going on before that.
Do you want to mention the Chippewa Valley Fishing Club?
Yeah, we're going to start this tomorrow night. We have a disabled adult fishing club on Tuesday nights in Eau Claire. That has been going on. This will be the 17th year. And the 11th year will start on Thursdays over. We're going to start at Butch's Bay in Menominee over there. But we ended up mostly on Lake Winona and in Red Cedar for Big Uglies on the bottom. Great fishing.
So there's two chapters? There's one
two chapters, yep. And then we're starting a third one. We've got a little issue in the Chippewa County, but there's a group called Chippewa Pals that will be fishing up there. As soon as we can find a dock area for basically, you got 40 or 50 people, well, lots with wheelchairs. It's kind of difficult to find the right spot to
sure,
do that.
Sure. Just because fishing is free, that doesn't mean that there aren't any obstacles. You still have to find a place to fish,
yep.
And we do have a lot of fishing facilities for people to shore fish, do we
right.
not?
Yeah. I take the trail down south of Highway 37. I get back there where Lowe's Creek comes into the Eau Claire River and into Chippewa. And we can walk down that trail for a while. And also, I think free fishing weekend, I think also the state park and the trails are open too.
Yep.
But I'd have to check that
you
for sure.
Tie your fishing rod onto your bike. I used to do that at one
yeah.
stage
oh
of my
gosh.
Life.
It works.
Yeah, absolutely.
It works, yeah. We put a bag over Gretchen's wheelchair and grab a fishing rod and, you know, some worms and go from there.
It's kind of hard to troll, though. Too many trees get in the way.
Trees get in the way. It is a little difficult. It can be done.
Silly question, but I guess it's fitting for this upcoming weekend. If I'm a parent and I've got a kid and neither one of us have really gotten involved, why? Why should I bother getting the kid out and casting a line?
It's a great relaxing activity, and it doesn't involve having to be connected to a wire. That's the main thing. It's kind of like the yin and yang,
mm-hmm.
and we've got so much high-tech stuff that we can counter that with a little bit of low-tech but more outdoors stuff. And that was a prediction about 30 years ago, was we got more wired and more high-tech. We would also have to balance that out with more outdoor stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of urban kids, but Eau Claire's really not that urban.
Right.
You know.
Well,
plenty of fishing places.
That's our time. Thanks so much, Dennis Vandenbloemen, volunteer angler education instructor. Also, thanks to the outdoor guys, Joe Knight and Dave Carlson. We also had Bill Hogseth and Scott Toshner on with the DNR. Thanks to them. And thanks to you for listening and calling in. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll be back next Monday morning. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again Monday morning.